Wait, a few more seconds here.
Okay.
Let's see.
Where are we?
Of course, everybody thought it was a message or a nice name.
Oh, I got a crowd. Hey, Ron. Yeah. You guys need to sit at the table if you don't want to. You can sit in the back. I'll be here. I think. But you guys can sit closer. You guys can get in the line over there. All right. No, get in line over there. Okay. Oh, here you go. Question.
Dan is up first.
He is?
Yes, he is.
Good to see you again.
Yeah. Aim low.
Officially
going to
introduce you. Oh,
my God.
No, you're going to use a big board or something? You're going to hand it up. I see. I don't have a problem with that. I could beg indulgence in just a couple minutes. So I apologize. I was at a really lengthy hearing this morning. This would not end. It got that way, it seemed. So.
Mary here?
No.
That's what she's referring to.
Well, she can be cranky with them.
For those of you listening in on the web, we will be getting started here in just a few minutes. We had a hearing this morning that went until about 20 minutes to the hour, and so a number of us are just getting back from that, getting ready for the next hearing here. So we'll be getting started in just a few minutes.
Since the commissioners have shed their jackets, others should feel free to do so if they are warm.
I'm going to go ahead and get started. You guys are set?
Okay. We will begin the hearings in dockets TC07-111 through TC0-116 in the matter of the petitions for arbitration pursuant to the Telecommunications Act of 1996 to resolve issues relating to interconnection agreements with All Telecommunications Incorporated. The time is approximately 2:15 p.m. The date is July 29, 2008. The location of the hearing is in Floyd Matthew Training Center, Foss Building, 523 East Capitol, Pierre, South Dakota. My name is Gary Hansen. I'm the Commission Chairman. With me today are Commissioners Steve Kolbeck and Dustin Johnson. I am presiding over this hearing. This hearing was noticed pursuant to the Commission's Order 4 and Notice of Hearing issued May 28, 2008. The issues at this hearing are the issues set forth by the petitions for arbitration and the issues as set forth by Altel and its responses to the petitions for arbitration that are unresolved. These issues are hereby incorporated by reference. All parties have the right to be present and to be represented by an attorney. All persons testifying will be sworn in and subject to cross-examination by the parties. The Commission's final decision may be appealed by the parties to the State Circuit Court and State Supreme Court. Rolaine Wiest, the Commission's counsel, will act as hearing examiner and will conduct the hearing subject to the Commission's oversight. She may provide recommended rulings on procedural and evidentiary matters. The Commission may overrule its counsel's preliminary rulings throughout the hearing. If not overruled, the preliminary rulings will become final rulings. At this time, I will turn the meeting over to Ms. Wiest.
Thank you. At this time, I will take the appearances of the parties.
-112 through 116, specifically Birchford Municipal Telephone Company, Kennebec Telephone Company, McCook Cooperative Telephone Company, Santel Communications Cooperative, and West River Cooperative Telephone Company.
Thank you. Mr. Wazorik.
Calvo Wazorik with the firm Gunderson Palmer. Nelson and Ashmore of Rapid City, appearing on behalf of Altel Communications and all five remaining dockets.
Karen Kramer with staff.
Okay, thank you. Before we begin the testimony, there was a motion to partially exclude testimony. Did you want to have that heard now, Ms. Moore?
If that would be the Commission's desire, yes. I believe it would make the most sense to introduce that issue at this point in time, and I intend to be brief. Okay. In regard to that motion.
Go ahead.
Thank you. In the dockets that are remaining before this commission, the petitioners filed a motion to exclude portions of the pre-filed rebuttal testimony of Mr. Ron Williams, which he filed on behalf of Altel on July 7th of 2007. Specifically, the petitioners are seeking to exclude that portion of his testimony that begins on page 2, lines 11 through 27, and continues on page 3, lines 2 to 24, and then page 4, lines 1 through 7. In this particular matter, one of the primary issues being presented to the Commission is what is the appropriate inter-MTA factor, or what factor should be applied to the inter-MTA traffic. This has been an issue which has been of lengthy dispute between the parties in this particular proceeding, and it is one where the respondent Altel has had the petitioner's study related to the inter-MTA factors which the petitioners believe should be in the interconnection agreement for quite some time. Additionally, despite two rounds of discovery, as well as some additional time, and despite an initial filing of testimony by both parties, Altel has never produced any documentation, any study of its own, advanced any methodology, or advanced any particular critique of the petitioner's inter-MTA study. the first notice that the petitioners had in this particular case, that Altel had essentially created its own study with regard to the NRMTA testimony, came on July 7, 2008, at the time of the filing of Mr. Ron Williams. And essentially, the testimony that I previously referenced is a study that we would submit to the commission isn't well-founded in any evidence, isn't founded in any methodology that was disclosed or explained to the petitioners prior to that time, and therefore the petitioners were never afforded an opportunity through the discovery process or through the submission of any testimony to test the veracity, the accuracy, and the foundation of the method of NRMTA study that has been advanced by Altel at this particular time. Under the rules of evidence, as advanced both by our state courts, also as are evident in our state statutes, the appropriate remedy when there has either been a failure to previously disclose information in the discovery process, or if there is testimony provided on the part of an expert which is neither substantiated nor founded in relevant or reliable evidence that is subject to testing by the petitioners, the appropriate remedy is exclusion. And under the circumstances in this particular case, we believe allowing Altel at this late stage to advance its own study and to suggest to the commission certain factors are more appropriate than those that have been developed by the petitioners after a significant time of study and disclosure of that information would unduly prejudice the petitioners. And given the fact that under the FCC rules and regulations and applicable state laws that the petitioners do in fact have the burden in this proceeding, we believe they'd be unfairly prejudiced by the introduction of this evidence at this late stage. And so we would respectfully request that Commission exclude that testimony of Ron Williams, which was referenced earlier, as it relates to the NRMTA factors that should be in this particular agreement. Thank you.
Just a clarifying question. Another remedy is a delay of the proceedings in order to give additional time for discovery. Are any of the petitioners asking for any delay?
We would not be asking for delay at this stage. Ms. Wiest, we believe that the appropriate remedy, given the amount of time that has already passed, would be exclusion. And one of the factors that can obviously be looked at by the commission is the amount of time that has passed since the filing of the petition, the discovery period, and the testimony. And given the fact we had quite an extensive passage of time in that, as well as a brief period when this matter was initially delayed from hearing in April until now, we believe that the appropriate remedy would be exclusion as opposed to any further delay of these proceedings, which we believe would also result in prejudice to the petitioners.
Thank you. Mr. Mazzari?
Thank you, Ms. Wiest. I think from the outset, what the Commission has to understand is what the petitioners would have you believe is a new study is actually rebuttal and analysis of their proffered study. Essentially, what Mr. Williams has done is, in the direct, Mr. Thompson provided the analysis of the study under which he's going to testify to and how he derived his NRMTA factors from that study. What Mr. Williams then did was look at his study and say, you know, it's an old study. It's a 2004 study. Since then, there's been a lot of changes in the network setup of Altel, which eliminates some of this traffic or has now that traffic delivered over inter-exchange carriers. So Mr. Williams then looked and said, okay, you included these numbers when you did your study in 2004. Calls from those numbers now are delivered over an IXC who pays terminating access. And then he did an analysis and then took those numbers out and said, if you're going to look at NRMTA, I don't think anybody's claiming that the petitioner should get paid twice on a terminating access argument. So if you're going to look at the NRMTA factor, you've got to exclude the changes. So you have to exclude these numbers in coming up with that factor. So Mr. Williams lays all that out in his rebuttal. That is classic rebuttal testimony. When you have an expert comes in and says, here's how I did my study, the classic rebuttal testimony that for courts and for this commission is, in your rebuttal testimony, come in and say, here's why that study is incorrect. Now, Altair has taken the position consistently that they believe that SS7 analysis is flawed as a total analysis. But if you're going to buy that this SS7 analysis works, then you have to account for these changes in how traffic had been delivered since the analysis was originally done in 2004. Clearly, as we pointed out in my brief, petitioners could have put their study as part of the discovery as a question, and they asked a question. Look at this discovery and tell us if we're counting any numbers that have changed, or have you gotten rid of any block of numbers, or are any blocks of numbers partial, so we shouldn't count them. Those questions were not asked, and obviously if those would have been asked, those things could have been addressed. Finally, then, as to what is the proprietary of the remedy, even if you would find some violation. Mr. Williams is here. Mr. Williams is available for cross-examination. He can be examined on why and how the changes took place, when they took place, how he calculated his numbers and accounted for those numbers, and how he changed. You know, he didn't redo a study. He just took this study, took these numbers, and then said reran the factors once he accounted for numbers that shouldn't have been included. All that can be examined here in front of the commission. I don't see anything that would bar this type of testimony. If the commission would decide this type of testimony to be barred, essentially I don't know why you'd have reply testimony, because reply testimony, by its very nature, is to address studies, facts, positions taken by the parties in their direct. That's all I have.
Ms. Kramer?
Thank you. This is Karen Kramer with staff. And staff would recommend denial of the motion to exclude. The reason given, the commission can give the testimony the weight it deserves. It appears to be more probative than prejudicial. And I think bottom line, Mr. Zorich could, even if this information were excluded, he could certainly ask petitioners, witnesses, these very questions. Based on these changes, how does that impact your study? So it's going to come in one way or the other. It probably comes in best through Mr. Williams, so staff would recommend denial.
Ms. Moore, any rebuttal?
Altel has couched this in terms of analysis and rebuttal of testimony and evidence that was initially offered on behalf of the petitioners. However, I think that is an understatement, because some of the specific comments made by Mr. Williams in his testimony, as Mr. Wazorik explained, do relate to changes in the Altel network. However, there is absolutely no supporting documentation or foundation given for those statements. I quote, he indicates divested operations in Nebraska to U.S. Cellular, modified routing translations in the Sioux Falls switch for traffic terminating to Alliance, Beresford, and West River, modified routing translations in the Rapid City switch for traffic terminating to Alliance, Beresford, Kennebec, McCook, Santel, and Venture. There's no indication of when these changes were made. There's no indication by way of documentation as to how these routes were changed. We are left with the remedy of certainly questioning Mr. Williams with regard to how this was done, but the petitioners are put behind the eight ball, so to speak, on having the appropriate knowledge to effectively cross-examine Mr. Williams. And so, therefore, we would disagree with the characterization of this as classic rebuttal testimony in this particular case. Because while it might be classic rebuttal in a court case where both parties have the opportunity to conduct depositions and do other sorts of discovery prior to this, in a proceeding such as this, we have discovery and we have pre-filed testimony. And essentially, once testimony is filed, there's no further opportunity. One simply goes to hearing. And Ms. Kramer's position is certainly well taken, and that the respondent, Altel, is still left with the opportunity to broach these questions to the petitioner's witnesses handling this particular issue through cross-examination. That is the best way in which it can be done. not by the insertion of unsubstantiated and unfounded evidence at this stage of the proceedings, which to a certain extent we're left only to ask open-ended questions to which we do not already have the best of abilities through cross-examination to test the veracity of the study. So therefore, we would, again, request exclusion of this portion of the testimony.
Thank you. After reviewing the arguments made both in the briefs and listening today, I'm going to deny the motion to partially exclude the testimony. I think that this is not a new study, but it is rebuttal of the petitioner's study, so the motion is denied. Are there any other motions before we begin?
Would have one related to the entirety of the proceeding, Ms. Wiest, and I likely should have done this before the motion to compel. The petitioners would move for purposes of this hearing to consolidate the remaining dockets so as to have a joint evidentiary record.
Is there any objection to that motion?
For the purposes of an evidentiary record, there's no objection.
So that motion is granted. And then also filed this morning is a template with some issues that have been settled. Do the parties want to put that on the record in this case or just go by the written template? Is there any need to discuss this before we begin is my question, Ms. Moore?
I don't believe there's any need to discuss this for the commissioner's purposes since you likely have not had a chance to review this given your meeting this morning. Docket TC07-111 involving Alliance Communications Cooperative and Altel was settled prior to this matter, so there won't be any testimony taken in regard to Alliance Communications. Additionally, issues 4 and 5, the parties were also able to reach resolution on for all of the companies involved in this particular docket. The issues remaining, I believe, are outlined for the commission and would be issues 2, 3, 6, and 7.
And one, excuse me,
yes.
And then at the bottom it says true-up process settled.
That would essentially be a discussion of the parties given that we were able to settle the term of the agreement. There would be a payment made retroactively to the date on which the agreement would have commenced and the parties were able to reach resolution on how that process would be handled.
Okay. Anything else before we begin with witness testimony? If not, you may begin this morning.
Thank you. The petitioners would call Dan Davis.
First report.
Would you please state your name for the record?
Yes, my name is Dan Davis.
And by whom are you employed, Mr. Davis?
I am employed with Consortia Consulting Resources, formerly known as Telec Consulting Resources.
Can you describe for the commission your educational employment background, please?
Yes, I have a bachelor's degree in business administration from the University of Nebraska and a master's degree in finance from the University of Nebraska.
Okay.
not my thing. There was a question from Commissioner Hansen as to my educational background. No, I do not have a degree in mechanical engineering.
It's just the opposite of
what you think.
And Mr. Davis, could you please describe your employment history for the commission as well?
Prior to my employment at Consortia, I worked for Alliant Communications for approximately 15 years, mainly in the areas of regulatory policy and analysis. And then I worked with Ford Consortia for the last 7 years, mainly in regulation and interconnection issues.
Have you provided testimony on behalf of the petitioners in these dockets?
Yes, I have.
And can you describe for the commission which issues you have provided testimony in regard to, please?
Yes, I provided testimony for issues 2 through 7, and issues 2 through 5 were issues that were filed by the South Dakota RLEX in the petition for arbitration. Issues 6 and 7 were issues that were filed by Altel in response to the petition for arbitration. And as Ms. Moore described earlier, issues 4 and 5 have now been settled. So issues 2 and 3 were as follows. Issue 2 was, what is the appropriate inter-MTA use factor to be applied to inter-MTA traffic exchange between the parties? And issue 3 is, what is the appropriate manner by which minutes of use of inter-MTA traffic terminated by the parties one to the other should be calculated and billed? In issues 6 and 7, where issue 6 is, what is the appropriate definition of intra-MTA and inter-MTA traffic? And issue 7 was, which party can initiate a direct interconnection request? Moving on to issue 2, and that is, again, what is the appropriate inter-MTA use factor to be applied to inter-MTA traffic exchange between the parties?
And Mr. Dix, before you start with that particular issue, you are the initial witness to discuss the inter-MTA traffic factor itself. Can you provide for the Commission a brief background and definition of inter-MTA traffic and calls? And I believe that we have provided to the Commission an exhibit that is South Dakota by major trading area for your review during this process. We would not intend to introduce that as an exhibit, but simply use it for illustrative purposes for Mr. Davis's testimony at this time.
Would it be easier for me to, I don't know if you can see it from here or not, but I might just get up to the point. Of, it might be a little bit easier for you to see.
Yes, please.
Okay.
We have copies.
So. Okay. I'll try to point out. For a wireline to a wireless call, If a wireless subscriber was located in the Minneapolis MTA, which would be here, for example, Pierre, South Dakota, and they were to make a call to a landline subscriber, say in Bison, which happens to be in the Denver MTA, that would be an inter-MTA call. If a wireless subscriber happened to be in the Denver MTA, say in Wall, and they wanted to make a call to a landline subscriber in Kennebec, which is in the Minneapolis MTA, that would be an inter-MTA call. One example of a wireless or a wireline to wireless inter-MTA call would be the example I like to use is Altel has an MPA and an X code for the rate center belonging to McCook of Salem. That NX code, I believe, is 605240. So the subscriber in Salem that is calling a 605240 telephone number, that wireless subscriber may actually not be located in the Minneapolis MTA when that call was originated. That person may be in Denver or maybe in California. And so that would actually be an example of a wireline to wireless inter-MTA call.
Mr. Davison, turning to issue two, can you please provide to the Commission a summary of your testimony that's been submitted to date?
Okay, yes, I will. Just briefly, I wanted to say that Mr. Thompson will provide testimony on what the appropriate inter-MTA factor should be. My testimony covered a couple of policy issues regarding inter-MTA traffic. The first is whether the appropriate or whether it is appropriate to charge state access charges for state inter-MTA traffic and interstate access charges for interstate inter-MTA traffic. The RLEC's position is that pursuant to the FCC's first report and order, it is appropriate. In paragraph 1044 of the first report order, the FCC found that the geographical location of the calling and called parties determines whether a particular call should be compensated under transport and termination rates established by one state or another, or under interstate or intrastate access charges. Had the FCC determined that either intrastate access charges or interstate access charges do not apply to inter-MTA traffic, it would not have referred to intrastate or interstate access charges in the first report and order. Mr. Williams states that inter-MTA rates are often negotiated, and although Altel disagrees with having to pay state access rates for state inter-MTA traffic, I believe it's worth noting that the agreement previously in effect between Altel and the 29 South Dakota RLECs, including the RLECs in this proceeding, was for the payment of state and interstate access rates. According to Section 5.1.1 of that agreement, the telephone company's access charges applied to the termination of inter-MTA traffic. And according to Section 2.1 of that agreement, inter-MTA traffic was subject to the RLEC's interstate or intrastate access charges. Mr. Williams asserted that the FCC has asserted authority over all traffic to and from the CMRS carrier, and therefore, if access charges are applied, it must be developed under the FCC guidelines. It appears that Mr. Williams is asserting that this commission does not have jurisdiction over intrastate intercarrier compensation rates for state traffic originating and terminating between the RLECs and Altel. If such an assertion were true, we would not be in front of this commission in this proceeding reviewing the rates the South Dakota RLECs proposed for transport and termination. Clearly, the Act, pursuant to 47 U.S.C. Section 252C and 47 U.S.C. Section 252D, gives this commission the authority over such rates. And as it relates to state access rates, Although Mr. Williams claims that the FCC has asserted authority over all traffic to and from a CMRS carrier, Mr. Williams does not provide a citation to back up that claim. This commission does have jurisdiction over state intercarrier compensation rates, including transport and termination rates and state access rates developed by the South Dakota RLEX. Mr. Williams opposes the use of the rates in the LECA tariff for state and RMTA traffic. Since these rates are approved by the commission, I believe they are the appropriate rates to charge for state and RMTA traffic. The second policy issue I discussed in my testimony with regard to issue two was in regard to Altel's claim that the language proposed in the RLEX agreement would result in only the RLEX receiving inter-MTA compensation. However, Section 2.1 of the RLEX proposed interconnection agreement clearly provides that inter-MTA traffic is that which is originated by the end user of one party and terminated to the end user of the other party. I certainly don't read that as one-sided as claimed by Mr. Williams. The last point on issue two that I would like to address is Mr. Williams' adjustment to the UNMTA factors as proposed by the South Dakota RLEX. Although Mr. Thompson addresses the development of the RLEX inter-MTA factor, part of Mr. Williams' adjustment to the inter-MTA factor is based upon the results of an analysis that Altel performed for issue three. And since I've addressed this analysis in issue three, the RLEX rationale for objecting to the analysis for issue three must be carried to objecting to the analysis for issue two. The studies that were conducted by Altel, or the studies were conducted by Altel on the day prior to the filing of direct testimony, and given the short time frame in which the study was conducted and the results compiled, the RLEX believed that the results could be prone to errors in some cases. Additionally, given that Altel did not conduct the study until the second round of discovery, the RLEX were not afforded the opportunity to conduct an analysis of Altel's study. I also want to point out that the adjustment made by Mr. Williams includes traffic that is routed to an IXC, despite the fact that we both agree that traffic routed to an IXC by the RLEX should not be included. Mr. Williams, on page 6, lines 24 and 25 of his rebuttal testimony, states that if traffic is routed to an IXC, Altel is not seeking any compensation. Backing out the IXC traffic for West River, for example, would reduce the percentages shown in column B of the table that Mr. Williams presents on page 8 of his rebuttal from 23% to 5%. Issue 3 is, what is the appropriate manner by which the minutes of use of intra-MTA traffic terminated by parties one to the other should be calculated and billed? The RLEX recommended that each party to the agreement should bill the other party to the agreement based upon actual recorded terminating traffic it receives from the other party or based upon billing records it has obtained from a third-party transit provider. This is how the RLEX currently determine the amount of terminating traffic they receive from Altel. The RLEX believe that Altel should also be capable of recording terminating traffic it receives on any direct connect and can obtain billing records from the third-party transit provider in order to bill each RLEX. Mr. Williams, in his rebuttal testimony, states that traffic data is not available to Altel because the records from the terminating access provider do not contain the necessary information that would allow Altel to bill the RLEX. It is my understanding that the originating access provider does have the necessary information, and I would recommend that Altel enter into discussions with the originating access provider, SDN, to obtain such records. Issue 6 is, what is the appropriate definition of intra and inter-MTA traffic? Altel proposes a definition of intra-MTA and inter-MTA traffic that excludes any mention as to how to distinguish intra-MTA traffic from inter-MTA traffic. The RLEX believe that in order to avoid disputes, there must be a reference in the agreement as to how one goes about making such a distinction. I believe the steady approaches discussed by Mr. Thompson are two ways of making such distinctions. Issue 7 is which party can initiate a direct interconnection request. It appears that Mr. Williams has changed his position on this issue. Mr. Williams now claims that Altel merely desires to maintain its right to establish a connection so that Altel can deliver its traffic directly to the petitioner. That's exactly what the South Dakota ARLEX have agreed to all along. Section 3.1.3 of Altel's proposed agreement stated that at the CMRS carrier's request, the parties will provision a two-way direct connection. The ARLEX are not claiming and have not claimed that they would not use the two-way direct connect. It's been the ARLEX position that a two-way direct connect should be established based upon the mutual agreement of both parties to the agreement. And that concludes my testimony.
We would have no further questions for Mr. Davis at this time.
Are we going to offer any testimony?
What? The exhibits? Exhibits through Mr. Davis, no.
Were you going to offer the testimony as an exhibit?
Oh, yes, I'm sorry. We would offer the testimony of Mr. Davis as an exhibit in this proceeding, both the pre-filed and the direct. I apologize, I misunderstood your question, Ms. Wiest.
And that would be in all five?
That would be in all five of the remaining dockets, TC07-112 through 116.
But do you have exhibit numbers for them?
We agreed upon using numbers for the ARLEX, so we would number those 1 for the pre-filed direct testimony for Mr. Davis.
Your numbering is what, 1 through 4?
No. We would be numbering Mr. Davis's pre-filed direct testimony as Exhibit 1. We would be numbering...
Excuse me. Just for ease of, you know, referencing some of these documents, especially when we get into other documents where we have different numbers for different companies, I'm just wondering if it would be better to have, for example, 07112, his direct as one exhibit, and then his direct in 113 as exhibit 2. It just makes it a lot easier when you're writing the record, you know, writing up an order, or even when you're doing the briefs.
That would be our intention, Ms. Wiest. My only question to you would be, would you prefer that the direct be numbered as 1 and the rebuttal be numbered as 2 for that company, or would you prefer that it be 1 for both the direct and the rebuttal testimony?
Does any of the other parties have a preference?
Well, in the past, we've generally done, petitioner's direct is 1, and then petitioner's rebuttal is 2.
Right.
And so you kind of kept it separated that way, or I suppose you could do what? Beresford direct, Beresford rebuttal, Davis direct. I mean, I'm not sure. We've got many options, but I would keep your direct and rebuttal back that.
And so we would have for 07112, Mr. Davis's direct would be petitioner's exhibit 1.
Yes.
And then for 07113, Mr. Davis's direct, or would you, do you want to go to rebuttal after that?
I think it would make sense for purposes of the record to go to the rebuttal after that. And
okay.
Those would be the same for both, or for that company, I should say, in order.
So exhibit 1 will be Mr. Davis's direct testimony for 112.
Yes.
Exhibit 2 will be his rebuttal testimony for 112.
Yes.
Exhibit 3 will be his direct for 113.
Yes.
4 will be direct rebuttal for 113.
Yes.
5 will be direct for 114. 6 will be rebuttal for 114.
Yes.
7 will be direct for 115.
Yes.
8 will be rebuttal for 115. 9 will be direct for 116. And 10 will be rebuttal for 116. And then are you offering all of those exhibits at this time, Ms. Moore?
We would move the admission of those exhibits. Yes, Ms. Wiest.
Are there any objections?
I guess I don't have any objections to as long as we actually have sets marked in case we want to refer to them or have them.
We're going to have to mark those, yes.
Yes, that's fine.
Do you have
yes.
those ready to be marked? So while they're marking the exhibits, I will just state for the record that exhibits. I'm sorry, yes. For the record, I will just state that exhibits 1 through 10 have been admitted. Then we'll just take a minute to mark them.
I'm sorry, I missed that. That's fine. Well, excuse me. No, that's fine by me. I don't have a problem with doing that, so we have Altel's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. And what I generally do, our testimony generally covered we provided general testimony but then provided separate exhibits. I have the testimony ready, so it's one set within the each separate exhibit attached to it. So you don't have, you don't have the same testimony marked five different times. It's just one set of testimony and then the five different exhibits. I just didn't see the need to kill three extra trees. So we did that in the L&P hearings. So.
Ms. Wiest, if it's okay with the commission, the court reporter and I have discussed this issue, and we thought it might be easiest if we specifically mark the testimony at the conclusion of the hearing as opposed to taking the time now to go through all of the copies in the binder, and then we could ensure that those are in the appropriate order for each of the dockets because they have some different markings on them as they currently exist.
I guess the question is, we don't have a marked exhibit then. For cross-examination purposes, we usually have a marked exhibit to give the witness if that's necessary. We wouldn't have it.
That's not something I have at this time, no.
I see that Mr. Davis appears to have the copies of his testimony, so I can ask questions off that. I'm assuming.
Sure, yeah. Are you talking about what I gave today? I've got copies in my directory. Oh, yeah.
So he won't need to refer to it. And if I, for some reason, would have him mark something, well, I'll just ask Ms. Moore to give us the copy at that point. But I don't anticipate having him mark it up. I was more concerned potentially on some of the exhibits with the cost witnesses.
Okay.
Make sure those are in the record when my cross comes about.
All right. So, Mr. Mazzari?
Now, Mr. Davis, the FCC hasn't promulgated any rule on inter-MTA traffic, have they?
I don't believe they needed to.
Okay. You talk about the first report and order, and isn't really the only place that the FCC talks about inter-MTA traffic is in the first report and order?
They address their intent in the first report and order.
Right. And that's really the only place that the FCC is giving any direction on this?
Yeah. I mean, I don't think you can take away from what they said in the first report and order.
Okay. I'm just trying to make sure we're on the same page here. The FCC hasn't modified or given any additional direction of what they believe first report and order, how it addressed inter-MTA traffic.
Are you asking about access rates or, I mean, I would like to explain why that is, if I may.
Do you know why the FCC has taken no position? Is that what you're saying?
Well, can I give you my opinion as to what happened?
Well, I believe my question was just, has the FCC given any additional direction?
They have not.
Okay. So let's turn to your rebuttal testimony, page 2.
In any particular company?
I think it's identical for most companies.
Okay.
I'm actually looking, I believe, at the... I'm actually looking at the Alliance, but I probably should look at some company that's still involved. So I will look at the McCook, but I believe your page 2 is identical for all the companies.
You said my rebuttal or my direct?
Your rebuttal.
Okay. Sorry. Page 2. Okay.
And that's where you cite paragraph 1044 of the first report in order.
Okay.
And that's basically the essence of what you're relying on here for your opinions on inter-MTA factor and traffic, isn't it?
Well, I don't know. I mean, paragraph 1044, there may have been one or two other paragraphs in the first report in order that talked about access traffic.
Okay. At the end of that paragraph, it talks as based on the last sentence of that paragraph, states as an alternative, LECs and CMS providers can use the point of interconnection between the two carriers at the beginning of the call to determine the location of the mobile caller or call party. Do you see that?
Yeah, I do see that, and I also see the sentence right before that.
So do I.
Okay.
My question is on the last sentence right now, the first sentence, but we can talk about the sentence right before it. Where it talks about, for administrative convenience, the location of the initial cell site when a call begins shall be used as the determinant of the geographic location of the mobile customer.
Okay.
That's the sentence right before.
Correct.
So this alternative, though, is it your position that the commission can't decide the alternative is a better way to determine who should pay and what the factor should be?
I don't think I ever... No, I don't. I didn't state that. I did state why I didn't think that the point methodology made much sense.
Can you just speak into I don't think I ever
said that the commission can't decide which methodology they should use to determine how much inter-MTA traffic there is. I have stated my opinion as to why I did not believe the point method made much sense.
Okay. I can appreciate that you have a different opinion, but I just wanted to make sure you're not telling this commission they cannot use the point method.
I think you asked and I answered.
Okay. So the answer is that's correct. The commission can use the point method if they think that works.
That is correct.
Okay. Now, let's talk about the theory of cost causation. Now, in the intrastate rates. In a typical intrastate call from a wireline individual to, say, somebody located in Beersford calls somebody West River in West River's territory. That's subject to intrastate charge, correct?
Yes.
And how is who takes the obligation to carry that call to West River?
From Beersford to West River, you're talking about landline to wireless, wireless to landline?
Wireline to wireline is what I said.
Okay, wireline to wireline, that would be a an access toll charge, well, it would be a toll call.
Right.
And so an IXC would deliver the call from SDN to a toll tandem somewhere in western South Dakota and deliver it to West River.
Okay. Now, if that's a wireless call from an Altel customer standing in Beersford to West River, who carries that traffic all the way to West River?
I quite frankly don't know. Okay. I mean, I don't exactly know how Altel is routing their traffic from Beersford to, I mean, the call is obviously delivered to the Altel cell site, out from the cell site delivered over to the Altel switch, and how Altel ultimately gets it to, you know, Bison, for example, I don't know.
Okay. Well, if Altel takes the responsibility, and I'll ask you to assume this since you don't know, to take that call to Sioux Falls, to take that call over its network to Rapid City, to then take that call from its switch, either through Quest or on their own through a direct connect to West River, and then Altel would pay the transiting carrier Quest. Altel has assumed all the cost in taking that call to West River, correct?
I assume so, yes.
Okay. And you're familiar with the Equal Access here in South Dakota?
Yeah.
And when the long-distance rates were established, there's an assumption, when you set those rates, that somebody else is paying for that traffic coming from SDN for all those miles to take it to West River, isn't there? Isn't there?
I don't know.
You don't know?
No.
But you're offering testimony here as what the appropriate rate should be.
Well, I'm saying what I'm talking about is the rate for terminating traffic, wireless terminating traffic to West River.
But
how are you, I mean, if you're talking to me about the rate structure and the rate level for state access charges, I believe that they have already been determined in a state access proceeding.
Okay, but local transport is part of that determination?
Transport and termination, I believe, are what is being addressed in this proceeding.
I'm sorry. In the long distance LECA rate or tariff, generally there's four categories for switched access, correct?
Transport, you go ahead and name them and I'll see if I agree with them or not.
Well, local transport, into office, optional features, and common line.
Correct.
Well, so part of the, as I understand the LECA, is part of the cost is the transport over SDN.
That would be correct. I'm also assuming that there's transport associated with some Quest trunking as well.
But who pays the transport on the Quest trunking? When Altel uses Quest trunking to take it to the same spot to West River.
Well, Altel pays Quest the transiting rate.
Right. So there is no cost causation by Altel when it delivers its call to a LEC. For transport.
I guess I'm confused about the purpose of the questioning.
Well, the purpose of the question is the poll method is a consideration, which you've testified for this commission. If the poll method is a better method to determine who's causing the cost in delivering the traffic, who pays what? If Altel pays everything up to their point of interconnection, why should they pay a premium past that point of interconnection then to terminate that call for services they're not using?
Well, what I don't understand is how the POI method determines the geographical location of the calling and called parties. Because that is how the that's how inter-MTA versus intra-MTA is established, is based upon the location of the cellular subscriber. The POI methodology is assuming that the cellular subscriber is not dynamic. It's assuming that the cellular subscriber is always located at the location of the POI when the call is originated. And that's how we're trying to determine what's inter from intra-MTA, is the location of the cell subscriber and the location of the landline subscriber.
So you don't understand the POI method at all?
Well, I'm telling you, I do. The POI method is based upon where the location, I mean, the assumption is the POI is the POI. I mean, let's go in and look at the definition of the POI in the interconnection contract.
The POI is the point of interconnection where Altel has all obligation to carry to that point, correct?
Now, let's go in and look at the definition. That way we don't, there's no argument between us here.
It's on page 4 of the agreement. Have you found it?
Yeah.
Yep. Okay. And that's fairly typical definition of POI, isn't
correct.
It?
Correct.
And so the POI is the physical location where the exchange of traffic occurs between the parties.
Correct.
And so on Altel's side of the POI, who pays all the costs to get it to that point?
On Altel's side of the POI, Altel pays for it.
Okay. So Altel pays for an example I gave from Beersford. They pay all the cost to take that call all the way to West River, it's a point of interconnect that Altel has with West River, correct?
Yeah, but what we're trying to determine is what is an inter-MTA call from an intra-MTA call.
But
that has nothing to do with where the cellular subscriber is located. And that is what we're trying to establish, is what's an inter-MTA call.
But the POI method essentially says use the point at which Altel stops paying as the origination point, stops paying the traffic, and then from there, if it's an NRMT call from there, that's when NRMT would apply. Wouldn't you agree?
I think I agree with that.
Okay. So you would agree with me that what the POI method tries to do is set up a point of origination where Altel has all the obligation to pay the cost to get to that point.
But the POI assumes that all calls are originated from that specific location.
And you would agree with me that Altel pays to carry all of its calls, no matter where it's originated, to that point of interconnection.
I would agree with that.
And if that point of interconnection is within the LEX service area, obviously there's no SDN transport that has to be paid.
That would be a direct connect.
All right. Are you aware of any specific LECA tariff that applies to CMRS carriers by definition? In South Dakota, of course.
Well, LECA tariff, yeah. The LECA tariff is for state access charges. And I go back to the same reading of paragraph 1044 of the FCC report order.
The net billing aspect, I want to talk a little bit. You had some issues with Mr. Williams' analysis and his rebuttal to Mr. Thompson's study. Do I understand you correctly that if a call is delivered by an IXC, you would agree that it should not be considered when deriving an inter-MTA factor?
I would agree.
Okay, and you had an issue with Mr. Williams because you felt he hadn't stripped the IXC traffic coming from the LEX, but you would agree that Mr. Thompson should not count IXC traffic coming from Alto.
You're going to have to address that with Mr. Thompson. Well, he performed the study. What I was addressing was what Mr. Williams did with respect to Issue 3 and then applied it to Issue 2. And Mr. Williams made a statement in his rebuttal testimony that said that traffic from an IXC, traffic that we deliver, or that traffic that we deliver to an IXC would not be included. That's what he said in his testimony.
Okay. But you've testified as to factors. So I guess I'm going to come back to it. In your opinion, when deriving an inter-MTA factor, or left deriving an inter-MTA factor, should it count IXC delivered traffic?
Okay, you're asking me my opinion. I will give you my opinion. If it's routed down an IXC truck group and it's carried by an IXC, you collect it from an IXC.
If it's routed down an IXC?
If it's coming down a truck group and it's coming from an IXC, you're going to have a carrier identification code assigned to that call, and you're going to bill the IXC access for that. If it's coming down the Quest truck group, I think is what you're probably trying to get at, and it doesn't have a KIP code, it's being delivered by Altel, it has Altel's OCN code assigned to it, it's going to get billed to Altel.
Right, but if Altel is delivering over an IXC, and the IXC is paying the termination,
that's access, correct.
Right, the access. And it's not the next position that they would get to collect it also then from Altel.
That would not be our position. You're not going to collect it twice for the same traffic.
Okay. So on the billing methods, you claim it's your client's position that they want both sides to collect and actually track the traffic and actually bill on a regular basis and not use factor billing. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Okay, if the commission would adopt that and not allow factor billing, what rate would you suggest the commission should allow Altel to bill for inter-MTA calls it receives?
I guess I don't have a position. I mean, I know what our rate is. I don't know what your rate is because you don't have an access rate on file.
Well, would you object to the commission, since if the commission would adopt a policy where Altel has to pay your access rate for inter-MTA, why shouldn't the commission make you pay the same access rate or the same rate to deliver inter-MTA traffic?
They can develop whatever methodology they desire. I'm just saying that there's no access rate on file with the commission for Altel traffic.
Right. You would agree the commission could set a rate for that type of traffic?
If they have the authority to do so, then yes.
Well, as part of this proceeding, they could say that you could offset it or you should be able to bill each other for the same type of traffic the same way, couldn't they?
If they have the authority to do so, yeah.
Thank you.
And just so I'm clear, you're not providing any testimony today on any on the issue number one, the reciprocal kind of cost issues.
That is correct.
You know, has any of the petitioners in these matters calculated or provided a traffic exchange ratio?
Have they calculated one?
Yeah, provided one as part of this proceeding.
Not as you're talking about track or issue three, correct?
Correct.
Okay. What they have done is they have looked at Mr. Williams' analysis to determine whether they believed his analysis was correct or not. So they have looked at data. They have not provided any data as far as this proceeding goes.
Okay. On the direct interconnection ploy, just a moment. As part of the direct interconnect issue, I believe in your testimony you stated the only place you can put a ploy is actually within the incumbent's network, correct?
Correct.
But if the incumbent has a ploy outside of its service area with another carrier, that would be an alternative, and that's part of their network that we could connect at that point also, correct?
I believe my position has been that the point of interconnection should be within the incumbent Lex network. I don't know whether the petitioners in this case have a direct or a point of interconnection outside of the LEC network.
That's all I have.
Ms. Greenley?
You want to use this?
Mr. Davis, if I understand correctly, well, let me ask you this. Have you reviewed South Dakota's LECA tariff?
The actual LECA tariff?
Tariff number 123, revised, page 17-4.
Page 17-4, is that what you said?
Yes.
Now, let me look real quick.
It's 17-1.
It may be quicker. Can I see what you're referring to? Maybe quicker than me going through all my...
Well, and I can ask you this, and then if we need to put it in as an exhibit, but you're not planning on putting that in as an exhibit?
I was not.
Okay. The question I have is, let me ask you this, what part of the LECA tariff do you intend to use?
Well, the rate that's in effect today is a flat rate, 12.5% or 12.5 cents.
Correct.
And the access rate, I guess, is the access rate is the 12.5 cents. I don't know if there's any way to take that 12.5 cents and divvy it up. I mean, it is what it is.
Okay, and that was my question. So you have no way of just charging someone a transport rate?
Not based upon the LECA tariff as it is today. I mean, it's a flat rate amount.
Correct. Okay, thank you.
Any questions from commissioners? No? Ms. Moore?
I do have some redirect, Ms. Wiest. Mr. Davis, Mr. Wiesorek initially asked you a question regarding the first report and order and how the FCC has, treated inter-MTA traffic. And I believe he cut you off before you had an opportunity to offer your explanation with regard to the treatment of their traffic and whether there's any context for that outside of the first report and order. Would you please explain your opinion to the commission in regard to that issue?
Yes. The concept of transport termination was first developed in the 1996 amendment to the Telecommunications Act. The FCC, in the first report and order, applied transport and termination to intra-MTA traffic, and then they codified their findings of the first report and order into Part 51 of the FCC rules. Access charge rules, access rate structure was developed 1987, somewhere in that time frame, prior to the amendment to the Telecom Act, and that's why I was saying I didn't believe that they needed to specifically address inter-MTA traffic as it relates to access, because it had already existed prior to the amendment of the 1996 Act.
Mr. Wiesorek also discussed with you the respondents' proposed usage of the POI methodology for the treatment of inter-MTA traffic, and you've obviously proposed on behalf of the petitioners a different method than that in this particular case. Why shouldn't this commission use the POI methodology?
Well, as I addressed in my direct, and I believe my rebuttal, but especially in the direct, using the POI methodology again assumes that the wireless subscriber is only at a particular location, and that is the POI location, when the call is originated. It assumes that they are not at a location that is most likely, and that is not at the POI. And I believe that the FCC has said that the way you determine whether the call is an inter-MTA call or an intra-MTA call is based upon the locations of the wireless subscriber when the call originates and the wireline subscriber when the call originates. That is what determines whether it's an intra- or inter-MTA call.
And is that a concept that the petitioners have attempted to address with their definitions of intra-MTA traffic and inter-MTA traffic?
Well, yes. In our definitions, we attempted to, what we proposed is that it would be based upon the originating cell site location for the wireless subscriber.
And is that something that was interposed by the petitioners in order to avoid confusion with regard to the treatment of inter and intra-MTA traffic?
Yes, it was.
And is that something which you believe, in your opinion, is a good idea in order to ensure appropriate treatment and payment of that traffic?
Yes, it is. Now, whether, I think what I believe Mr. Williams stated in his testimony was that we shouldn't address it in the definitional section, but even if it's not addressed in the definitional section, I still believe that there has to be some method addressed in the interconnection agreement, whether it's the definitional section or some other section in the agreement that talks about how you're going to make a determination as to whether it's an inter-MTA call or an intra-MTA call. I mean, unless factors can be finalized and established, but if they can't, there's got to be some way of making that determination. Otherwise, there's going to be continuous arguments between parties as to the distinguishment of those two types of calls, and they will be in front of the commission on a, you know, how many, don't know how many times, but I'm sure you would just as soon not see them in front of the commission in future proceedings making arguments over how to measure that traffic.
In your experience as a consultant, is it typical for the parties to include definitions for the treatment of inter- and intra-MTA traffic?
In interconnection agreements that I have seen, it's not. It's typical, and it's, yes.
So what the petitioners are proposing in this particular instance isn't novel or new by any means?
No, it's not.
Mr. Wazorek also talked with you about the rates that should be applied to inter-MTA traffic, and I believe he engaged you in a discussion regarding the LECA rate and who is responsible for transport and some of those sorts of things. With regard to the LECA rate itself, is that distance sensitive?
No, it is not.
And do you know whether the LECA rate is currently established has with it an associated SDN transport element?
Well, again, if you look at the LECA rate, I would say yes. There's transport costs in that rate, but I don't believe you can take that rate and say this is how much is for this element and this is how much there is for this element, this is how much there is for Quest transport, this is how much is for SDN transport.
So in effect, the rate is the rate, and that's what is to be applied to the inter-MTA traffic in this case, in your opinion?
That is my opinion.
Do you know whether Altel intervened in the proceeding that was held before this commission to establish the LECA rate?
I don't believe they did.
Under your understanding of the rules, if Altel had wanted to do so, would they have had the opportunity to do so and comment on that rate?
Yes, they would have.
I'd like to talk with you about a couple specifics with regard to calls. We're talking about the jurisdiction of a particular call. What would the jurisdiction of a landline customer in Beersburg to a landline in Bison be?
Landline to landline?
Correct.
It would be a a state intralata toll call.
And is that something to which intrastate toll rates would apply?
Intrastate access rates would apply, yes.
If you look at what would be the jurisdiction of a wireless customer in Beersford calling a landline customer in Bison?
Interstate access charges.
So again, you would apply the interstate access charge with the LECA rate?
Correct.
Mr. Wazorek also talked with you about the balance of traffic in this particular case and whether Altel could apply its own rate to the traffic. In your experience, do you know, has Alltel ever asked this commission to develop a rate that it could apply to traffic, such as the petitioners are requesting here?
Are you talking about state access?
Yes.
I'm not aware that they have.
And is that something that, to your knowledge, was raised by Alltel in its response to the petitioner's initial petition in these matters?
I'm going to ask you to ask the question again because I'm not sure what you're asking.
Sure. Mr. Wazorek was talking with you about whether this commission would have the authority to allow Alltel to establish its own intrastate rate. In Alltel's response to the petition served on it on behalf of the petitioners in this case, did Alltel make a request of this commission to establish an intrastate rate?
I don't recall that they did.
So at this point, it's fair to say that that would be outside the context of this particular proceeding.
And that objects to calls for a legal conclusion.
Overruled. You can go ahead and answer the question, Mr. Davis.
It wasn't raised prior to this, in this proceeding.
Additionally, with regard to the balance of traffic issue that you addressed earlier and how the petitioners have proposed that the commission treat that particular issue, does Alltel have the ability to measure its own traffic?
Well, I think that they can measure it. Yes, they have the ability to measure their own traffic. I mean, they can measure it, I believe, on direct truck groups. They can measure it. And on indirect truck groups, they can measure it in the same manner that the RLECs do, and that is they purchase records from the transit provider, and that is what gives them the ability to bill the other party. But yes, I mean, I would assume that given the size of Alltel, that, you know, they're a $30 billion corporation, I can't imagine that they don't have the resources to get the records to bill the other parties.
And in your opinion, is there any authority, whether statutory at the state level or at the FCC level, that would allow Alltel to essentially make it incumbent upon the LECs to do their billing for it?
I am not aware of anything, at least in the FCC rules or in the Act or the Commission rules, that basically state that the RLECs must bill on behalf of any other carrier.
Thank you, Mr. Davis. Nothing further.
Any further cross, Mr. Rosario?
Sure. Here, Alta's not asking them to actually bill. They're just asking them to come up with a traffic factor to offset, correct?
Well, yes, as long as we agree to the factor that you propose.
Well, are you saying that the LECs are somehow barred from proposing their own factor?
They are not barred.
Right. You said something earlier that there was no request in this arbitration for compensation similar to the interstate tariff. Remember saying that?
I think we said in the petition or in the response to the petition.
Right. Did you actually read the response?
Well, I have read it, yes.
Okay. May I approach the witness?
Yes.
Show you Alltel's response to petition for arbitration with Cook. And show you. One of these highlighted, that'll work a little easier. Page 4 of that petition. This is actually Kinnevitz. Could you start with the ending of the paragraph and read where it starts, read out loud where it says, in other words.
In other words, petitioner should be required to compensate Alltel for its originating NRMTA traffic, just as Alltel would compensate petitioner for Alltel originated NRMTA traffic.
Okay. And here's the response to McCook. Does that have the same request?
Can I just look at this
sure.
for a minute?
And do you want to see every other one?
No, that's fine. I would take your word for it.
So you'd agree that there was a request made, but there would be their symmetrical compensation. Read again.
When you say symmetrical, I just want to make sure. Well, I don't want to play word games. I'm not sure if it says symmetrical here or not. It just says petitioner should be required to compensate Alltel for its originated traffic, just as Alltel would compensate petitioner for Alltel originated traffic. I'm not sure if it necessarily specifies symmetrical compensation. It says what it says.
Why don't you go up and read before it starts?
Okay.
It's Alltel's position.
Well, perhaps I should clarify what you're asking. You're saying that we should pay you the same rate as you, and vice versa.
Well, I've asked you to read this.
Okay, I'll read it. It is Alltel's position that to the extent an inter-MTA use factor is included at all, that factor should reflect the net amount of inter-MTA traffic exchanged between the parties.
And next sentence.
Okay. A net inter-MTA use factor provides for each party to realize compensation for termination of inter-MTA traffic originated by the other party.
Right. So you agree with me what that's saying is if I send you a minimum at whatever the rate is, the interstate rate or whatever rate is determined, and you send me a minute back, that's inter-MTA, it's treated the same, it nets out to zero.
When you're talking about the specific minutes, yeah, but I don't think that necessarily says that it's symmetrical rates.
Well, I mean,
you're saying you want to net it out to zero, but I don't necessarily believe that we agree with that.
But the problem you got is my questions are based on representation we just made this commission that we didn't make any representations as part of the response. That we were attributable, that there should be an equivalent rate.
I'm going to object to this line of questioning. The document speaks for itself, and Mr. Davis has answered the question. Overruled.
And so now, what I'm saying is you reached the legal conclusion you're barred from asking for that rate in this proceeding. But we essentially asked that we have a set-off.
There you go. You just said essentially. I don't believe there's anything there that says that there should be a symmetrical rate.
So where it says that you should be required to compensate Alltel for its originated MTA traffic just as Alltel would compensate petitioner, you don't see that as a symmetrical.
It doesn't say symmetrical.
Right. Well, you had a question on the LECA rate. Under there's a definition under the tariff as to what the tariff applies to, correct?
Do you want to show me the definition?
Well, are you saying,
I mean, I don't have the document in front of me, so I mean, if you want to ask me something about the document, I'd like to see it because I don't have it in front of me.
Well, the tariff, you said the tariff applies, correct?
That is correct.
And does the tariff, in the tariff, does it set forth that it applies to wireless inter-MTA traffic, intra-MTA traffic? Does it ever identify that it actually applies, that tariff say it applies to it?
Based upon my review of that document, I don't believe it specifically states that it applies to wireless traffic. I believe I've given testimony as to why I believe it does.
I'm going to ask you, do you have the first report, a copy of the first report in order in front of you?
I have very limited.
All right. Well,
a couple of paragraphs.
All right. That's all I've got, too.
Okay. So
I'm not sure the one I'm talking about.
I think I actually have it that with me as well.
Okay.
So
I just want to ask you a question about the first report in order, paragraph 1043. And you've got a copy of that in front of you?
Yep.
Are you looking at the copy I gave you or your
own? No, either. I'm not making a difference.
At the bottom of the copy I gave you, where there's the last sentence that starts after the footnote, 2485, starts based on our authority.
Okay.
You see that? Which is based on our authority under Section 251G to preserve the current interstate access charge regime. We conclude that new transport...
Can you answer?
I'm sorry.
It says, based on our authority. Sorry. Preserve
the current interstate access charge regime. We conclude that the new transport and termination rules should be applied to Lex and CMRS providers so that CMRS providers continue not to pay interstate access for traffic that currently is not subject to such charges and are assessed such charges for traffic that is currently subject to interstate access charges. You see that? Yeah. Now, would you agree with me that if Altel would have a number that was rated local to a LEC that wasn't treated as an interstate access charge before the first report and order, it was treated local, that it should continue to be treated local?
Okay, you're saying a wireline originated call to a wireless NX code that's rated locally would be a locally rated call that would probably be subject to recipcond.
Okay. Let me ask you a different. Are you familiar with the MTA issue that surrounds Beersford?
Yes.
Okay. The MTA line goes through the middle of town.
More or less, yes.
So is it Beersford's position that even if it's a locally rated number for Altel, that constitutes inter-MTA traffic?
Yes.
Even though the number is a locally rated number?
Yes.
And was locally rated before first report and order.
Well, if it was rated locally before the first report and order. I guess all I can say is if it's an inter-MTA call, then it's an inter-MTA call.
That's all I've got.
Ms. Kramer?
Thank you. I just want to clarify on the liquor tariff. You know what I'm talking about with the composite rate,
mm-hmm.
right? You stated there was no transport rate listed as an element of that composite rate.
Well, I think what I said is, well, yeah, let me clarify, that the rate itself, you can't determine what proportion of that rate is attributable to transport.
Okay, and I guess that's what I want to clarify. Actually, Harlan Best from staff gave LECA a number of methods to do that, but the LECA members rejected those methods. Isn't that correct?
I was not part of that proceeding, so I mean, I really can't tell you what Harlan did and what the LECA members did.
Okay, thank you.
Commissioners?
Ms. Moore asked me some questions about your opposition to the point method. Am I right in saying that your opposition to the point method came in large part because it was not an accurate indicator of where the caller actually was?
That was my, that's my position.
Is the point method an accurate way of trying to make the cost causer the cost payer?
Well, what the SEC stated was that the determination as to whether a call is inter or intra was the location of the wireless subscriber, and that's how I base my opinion on this particular issue, is where is the caller located when the call is originated? I mean, it's, from my perspective, it's as simple as that.
So, in the rebuttal testimony, you do reference paragraph 1044 where the FCC does note the alternate of using the point method.
Yes.
So
yes.
I'm asking your opinion. I mean, is the point method a very good methodology for determining or making sure that the cost causer is the cost payer?
I don't know. I really don't. I mean, again, I was strictly basing my interpretation on the location of the wireless subscriber and what was the best methodology to determine where the wireless subscriber was located.
The paragraph 1044 that you referenced addresses it's financial obligations. So do you have an opinion as to what is more important as far as a methodology for determining financial obligations, determining the actual location of the caller or determining what a fair payment mechanism would be?
When I read paragraph 1044, it says we conclude that the parties may calculate the overall compensation amounts. And what I take away from that is calculating the compensation amounts based upon whether they're access or whether it's transport and term.
I'm sorry, can you repeat that?
Word for word, no. The FCC states that we conclude that the parties may calculate overall compensation amounts, and then it says by extrapolating from traffic studies and samples. And so when I get done reading that sentence, it's like, okay, what method are you going to use to calculate? And again, to me it's, are you going to use access or are you going to use transport and term? and that the two methodologies that you could use would be based upon the location of the initial cell site or based upon the point of interconnection.
Okay, thank you.
Any other questions from the commissioners?
When you say point of interconnection, are you talking whether a West River cell phone customer hits their point of interconnection at the Highmore switch or the McCook switch or the Florence Sioux Falls shopping? Is that what you...
Now, the point of interconnection, based upon my reading of the contract, is the point of interconnection would actually be within the RLEC network. So it would be, if you're talking about Bison, it'd be somewhere near Bison.
Your tandem switch is your point of interconnection.
Well, the way the contract is worded is the point of interconnection is actually only specific to a direct interconnection. And so the point of interconnection between Altel's network and West River's network would actually be between Altel's network and West River's network, which would be, in this specific example, somewhere at or near Bison.
Are you taking it to that RLEC CO?
Somewhere, not necessarily. The point of interconnection wouldn't necessarily have to be at the Bison CO, but somewhere close to that vicinity.
So you're saying that if that customer, that West River customer, is in Highmore, that call is going back to West River and then to the tandem out to the equal access for point of interconnection?
It might be helpful for me to set up the call scenario that we're talking about. You're talking about a wireless calling.
Let's say they're in the Highmore RLEC area. They're in Highmore, buying and combine.
The tower site is, I'm assuming, is somewhere close to Highmore.
Okay. So where would the power interconnection be?
Well, in that particular case, I don't believe that there is a direct point of interconnection because the call would go back to Sioux Falls and use a transiting provider. And the way that the contract is actually worded is the point of interconnection is actually only addressing a direct interconnection point. It would only be if Altel had, say, a tower site outside of Bison, for example, and the two parties were actually exchanging traffic over that direct connect for traffic to and from Bison and probably a wireless subscriber that has a Bison local MPA and an X code.
Is that one of the problems with using point of interconnection is those types of scenarios?
Well, yes, because in the point of interconnection would always be close to Bison.
Sure. Okay, thank you.
Any other questions? Any further redirect?
Nothing further.
Thank you. Go ahead.
The definition of POI talks about, it establishes the technical interface and points for operational and financial division of responsibility. The definition of POI from the agreement on page 4 that we discussed earlier. And if Altel uses Quest to take its traffic to West River to the point of interconnect, that becomes the point of interconnect in this agreement between West River and... There's a difference here because I don't want to confuse the issues that we're talking about where to set up a direct POI versus what a point of interconnect is defined under the agreement. The point of interconnect in the scenario, once you agree, where Altel pays Quest to carry that Highmore call from its switch of Rapid City and hands it off at the meet point between Quest and West River, that's the point of interconnect
under this agreement for that call.
I'm sorry, is there a question there?
Is that correct?
Well, I understand that's a statement, but the way the agreement was established was the agreement was established for direct interconnection only. I mean, well, let me rephrase it. The agreement with respect to POIs is a point of interconnection for direct interconnection only.
I appreciate it. That's an issue as to what's going to be direct interconnect, but the definition of POI in the telecommunication is broader than that. Our point of interconnect is, wouldn't you agree that ITEL's point of interconnect with West River is the Quest meet point, because that's where we bring our traffic and we pay to bring it to that point, and they pick it up at that point, meaning West River picks it up at that point.
Well, again, I'm only looking at it from the context of what's in this agreement. You're trying to take me to a place that I don't think we've had a discussion with respect to this agreement, and that's what we're here to arbitrate is the proposed interconnection agreement.
So there's no point of interconnection between West River and Alto?
Well, is there a direct interconnection point?
I
don't.
No.
Is there a point of interconnection between Altel and West River? It's a transiting arrangement.
Well, perhaps you would agree with me that it's Altel's obligation to carry the traffic to West River, and it's Altel's financial responsibility to carry the traffic to West River, even if it's a transiting relationship.
Correct. You would pay Quest the transiting rate to get to West River.
Yeah. And as I understand this agreement, it applies to indirect connects.
Yes, it does. But in terms of strictly speaking what a point of interconnection is, it specifically addresses it with respect to direct interconnection.
Yeah, and I guess I thought this was going to be, I'm sorry, Commissioner, I thought this was going to be easier to clear up than it's turning out to be, but you would agree with me that the definition on page 4 of point of interconnect doesn't say anything about it having to be a direct connect. It ties it to operation.
Yeah. I'll make it easy for you. Yes, that's what it says.
All right. It's actually easier to determine NRNT factors, isn't it, using the POI method than trying to figure out origination points?
Well, easier.
Well, I mean, you know where the POI is. It doesn't.
But you don't. It doesn't say anything about where the wireless subscriber is located.
Okay. That's all I have then.
Thank you, Mr. Davis.
Okay, thank you.
Do you need a break, Sherry? Oh, that's right.
Sure. Okay, let's get started. Ms. Moore, you may call your next witness.
Thank you. The petitioners would call Sue Vanacek. And I believe she's seated already.
Raise your right hand, please. Do you solemnly swear the testimony you're about to give will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth to help you God?
I do.
Would you please introduce yourself to the commission?
Yes, my name is Sue Vanacek, and I'm employed by Consortia Consulting. My business address is 233 South 13th Street, Suite 1225, Lincoln, Nebraska, 68508.
Ms. Vanacek, can you provide the commission with a brief history of your educational background and employment, please?
Yes, I have a bachelor's degree in business administration and a master's degree in economics from the University of Nebraska, Lincoln. I have 23 years of experience in the telecommunications industry, 9 with Consortia Consulting, and prior to that, I worked for a mid-sized telephone company called Lincoln Telephone.
And Ms. Vanacek, will you be at Consortia Consulting in the future?
As of next month, I have accepted a position at the Nebraska Public Service Commission. I will be the director of the Nebraska Universal Service Fund and will be also be in charge of wireless E911 implementation.
Have you filed testimony in the dockets that are currently before this commission?
Yes, I filed rebuttal testimony in this proceeding on July 7th.
And on whose behalf did you file that testimony?
I'm testifying on behalf of McCook Cooperative Telephone Company, Beresford Municipal Telephone Company, Kennebec Telephone Company, Santel Communications Cooperative, and West River Cooperative Telephone Company. And I'll refer to these companies collectively as the South Dakota RLX.
Can you provide the commission with a statement of the purpose of the testimony that you filed in these matters?
Yes. My testimony deals with the appropriate interpretation and application of the pricing standards for transport and termination specified in the Telecommunications Act of 1996, which were codified into rules by the FCC.
Can you please present a summary of that testimony to the commission?
Yes. The Act specifies that the rates for transport and termination should be based upon the additional cost of providing these elements. The FCC interpreted the Act and codified rules to determine rates for transport and termination. These rules specify that the cost of unbundled network elements, including transport and termination, should equal the sum of the total element long-run incremental cost, or TELRIC, and a reasonable allocation of forward-looking common costs. The total element long-run incremental cost can simply be explained by elaborating on each word in the term. The word total indicates that the increment that forms the basis for the TELRIC study is the entire quantity of the network element provided. The word element is the service for which the cost is being developed, in this case, transport and termination. The words long run refer to a period of time long enough so that all of a firm's costs become variable or avoidable. The words incremental cost refer to the additional costs a firm will incur as a result of expanding the output of a service by producing an additional quantity of the service. Another important rule to consider in developing transport termination rates is that the FCC requires that the cost of shared facilities shall be recovered in a manner that efficiently apportions costs among users. Based on these rules, several of Mr. Conwell's recommendations regarding costs that should not be included in the rates for transport and termination are incorrect. For example, Mr. Conwell claims that the cost of switch processors for the South Dakota RLEX should not be considered usage sensitive because the switch processors appear to have sufficient capacity to handle the expected volume of traffic and therefore should not be included in the termination rate. Usage sensitivity is not determined by whether the traffic of any particular carrier would cause a switch processor to exhaust. Usage sensitivity is determined by whether costs vary with usage. If switch processors did not have usage constraints, then a discussion of switch capacity would be irrelevant. Furthermore, if a switch processor is not found to be usage sensitive, then this would mean that Alltel would get the use of the switch processor for free, while subscribers to local and long-distance service would pay for the use of the switch processor. Such a pricing scheme does not comply with the FCC's rule requiring that the cost of shared facilities should be recovered in a manner that efficiently apportions costs among users. There is a precedent for usage-sensitive pricing for the switch processor within the area served by the United States Court of Appeals for the Eighth Circuit, the area in which the state of South Dakota is located. In arbitration between a wireless carrier and an incumbent local exchange carrier in Nebraska, the Nebraska Public Service Commission found that the switch processor is usage sensitive and that the cost of the processor should be included in usage sensitive rates for switching. This finding of the Nebraska Public Service Commission was reviewed and upheld by the Eighth Circuit. Mr. Conwell's suggestion that transport cable costs should be computed only for routes used to transport Alltel's mobile to land traffic would be a violation of the FCC's TELRIC rule. Because TELRIC is to be computed over the total quantity of the element provided, this means that all transport cable costs must be included in determining a rate for transport. The same general argument applies to Mr. Conwell's recommendation that CALEA and Centrex license fees should not be included in termination rates, since these costs are not attributable to terminating mobile-to-land traffic. These fees are appropriately included in termination costs, as they are necessary components of a switch, and switching costs should include the total cost of a switch, not only the components used by a particular carrier. And this concludes the summary of my testimony.
Ms. Banachek, I have one clarification question for you. In regard to your last comment, you indicated that the license fees should not be included in termination rates since these costs are not attributable to terminating mobile-to-land traffic.
Mm-hmm.
Did you intend to say mobile-to-land, or did you mean land-to-mobile?
Well, actually, I guess either way is probably appropriate.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
We would move for the admission of Ms. Banachek's rebuttal testimony for clarification with regard to the record. Ms. Banachek's testimony is identical for all of the dockets, and in this case, we would move for its admission in TC07-112 through 116, and I believe we would be on Exhibit 11 at this point.
Is there any objection to Exhibit 11?
None.
If not, it's admitted. And I believe at this point the parties have discussed and believe that cross-examination will go past 5 o'clock. Is that correct, Mr. Wizard?
Yes, we believe it probably will take more than a half hour. I guess my recommendation would be I've got some exhibits that can get pre-marked. Council can stay and pre-mark a couple exhibits, and we can just start it up tomorrow right at 9. I believe we're scheduled to start again at 9 here.
8:30?
8:30. We've had some of these telecom hearings go quite a bit later than planned. I know it's early yet, but I mean, do we feel like we're going to run into a bind on Friday? Could we spill into the weekend? If that's the case, what's the pleasure of the parties? I'm not talking necessarily about today, but Wednesday, Thursday, does it make sense to plan on a little bit longer days?
It's my feel that we won't need Friday. We've narrowed some of the issues on some of the, and then we've got rid of one of them. And
I don't presume to speak for Ms. Moore, but I saw Friday as unlikely that we'd spill over into, but possible at this point.
We had planned for that time frame with the hope that we wouldn't need it. I think with some of the issues that have been resolved, we do have a much better opportunity of concluding either earlier on Friday or perhaps even on Thursday. I would anticipate we have two very lengthy witnesses left, but that Ms. Vanacek would likely not be one of those. So I think my discussions with Mr. Wazorek were that if it's the Commission's desire to conclude prior to 5 o'clock tonight, doesn't make a lot of sense to get into cross-examination here and then have to break that up and resume in the morning. It might make more sense for everyone involved to start in the morning, and I don't believe we're going to have a multiple part hearing, or it certainly wouldn't be my hope that we would run into that problem.
It is not uniquely your hope, Ms. Moore.
With that, I believe we can adjourn for today, and I believe this hearing notice did say 8:30 in the morning. Is that acceptable to everyone? Okay, I'll be back here at 8:30.
All right.